Just because you cannot be an expert in something does not mean you cannot be an expert in making it happen. Those are the words of Robin Smith, CEO and co-founder of WeGoLook.com, and my guest on this episode of The Spirit of Leading. I'm Garland McWaters. Robin, I'm very curious about those words, and I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of The Spirit of Leading and sharing your story and telling us a little bit about your company.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to share our organization and our journey with you. I'm very honored to do so.
Well, this is a relatively new company.
Yes.
And in general terms, WeGoLook.com uses the internet to dispatch experts out to go look at property or to gather various information about property and things and report back to the customer. And so it's kind of like having a field person out there to go look on your behalf because you can't go.
You are right on track. We are actually a mobile technology company, and we feature a crowdsourcing platform. We have over 26,000 crowd workers who we call lookers, and we do dispatch them on behalf of the customer, whether it's an individual or corporate client, to capture on-site data. So it could be photos, videos, measurements of a vehicle, property like you mentioned, heavy equipment. We can perform low complex tasks like picking up documents and things, but we can really go look at anything, cell phone towers, online dates.
I was sorry to say.
All kinds of stuff.
Check that guy out. You know, check that person
That's right.
out for me.
So we really help arm our customer with data they otherwise wouldn't have, you know, access to.
Yeah. When I first heard about your company and heard of this idea, I thought, well, you know, in retrospect, that sounds like kind of an obvious idea. But the company came about because you found out it wasn't that obvious.
That's right. So just to kind of give you some background there, late 2009, one of our friends was wanting to purchase a high-end projector on eBay and thought that the seller was misrepresenting the item. And he said, you know, I wish I had someone to go look at that for me. And I said, there's got to be a company that does that. There were a lot of people buying on eBay. Obviously, the trend was for more and more people to utilize the internet to purchase, you know, higher ticket items. And now look at Amazon, and you're buying your laundry soap on there. But at the time, it did some research, couldn't find a company that provided those services, and thought, wow, what a great way to help online consumers mitigate their risk when, you know, purchasing something sight unseen. So that was the whole motivation, was to really help people who were wanting to buy something but really wanted to validate its existence or current condition.
Well, that's just fascinating to me, the way that sort of came about. But it sounds like once you kind of started looking, you went through sort of a systematic way of kind of looking into it. Yes. To see what was there, what services might be available. And then as you continue to look, you sort of realize, well, that's not really there. That service is not really there. And I suppose there was sort of a moment. There was sort of like this aha, this like, mm-hmm. Well,
right,
this could be something. And so tell me about how you sort of came to that moment and what
sure.
it like was like and what you felt like when you realized, oh, I think I could do something here.
Well, I was fortunate. I had a consulting company prior, and I had a lot of experience building business development centers, primarily for auto dealers, utilizing different types of CRM tools and platforms. And so I had some exposure to the internet and different types of platforms that utilized lead generation. When I was doing the research, found, you know, auto inspection companies, found property inspection companies. There are nationwide courier services, but there was no company that offered all of them. And I thought, wow, you know, we could really just build a dynamic platform, very robust, with the ability to import any kind of schema that would allow the customer to really have us go look at anything. And it wouldn't have to be just an auto or just, you know, property or just heavy equipment. And so I just really put some thought into it, talked about it, and started kind of taking small steps, worked, you know, consulted with a technology company who could help me build the platform. And then I felt like it was just, I mean, you just had this gut moment of, you know what, I'm going to put all of my energy into this. And I believe in it with all my heart that this is a good service. There was not one person I talked to that said, that's amazing. Absolutely. That's a needed service. Everyone thought it was a great idea. There was not one naysayer. Mm-hmm. And when you get that kind of feedback from people that you trust, I was like, you know what? I feel like I'm on the right track. So
right.
That's really kind of, I don't know if it was one aha moment. It was kind of like a series of them that finally said, okay, just go ahead and go for it.
I wonder what that was like, because sometimes, you know, somebody puts an idea out there and the people around you look at you and they say, you want to do what?
Uh-huh.
you can't sell that.
I've had some of those too.
So, because they don't have the same vision that you have. They don't see it from the same perspective that you have. And so from the time you kind of saw that as a possibility to when you thought, well, maybe I should go for this, I'm sure there were people around you that you discussed it with,
yes.
and you kind of felt out about that,
and
to see if you were going to get any real. How much did that really play into your decision to go for it? If you'd got a lot of,
you know,
these sort of, you know, I don't know if that's a good idea or not. What do you think?
Frankly, probably not a lot. I was pretty set on it. I had my heart set on it. I just kind of needed that reassurance. But I certainly have along the way, and this is for everyone out there. I've had ideas and, you know, we've pivoted and we've evolved and you can't pivot and evolve unless you have other ideas. And there are people go, oh, that's a terrible idea. You shouldn't do that. If you believe in it, go for it anyway. I've had people tell me, no, you shouldn't go out and talk to this company or that company. There's no way that would ever happen. I'm like, okay, whatever. And just go do it. And it happens.
Right.
Sometimes you just have to have that faith and just go for it. I think one of the things I've always learned about, and my dad said this to me one time, because you just don't know the meaning of the word no. He goes, if you really want something, you figure out a way to get around it. And that's probably not good coming from your dad, but it's good when you're, you know, in a position of trying to make something grow or, you know, push forward. You just go, okay, just because there are people that say you can't do it, or don't think it's a good idea, if you truly believe in it and you have the right kind of solution, definitely go for it.
That's right. I don't hear no because I know I can.
There you go,
so
right.
A little bit of play on it.
Yes, I like it.
And you mentioned something a minute ago in describing your company, and the word that came up was crowdsourcing.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is a transformational situation
because of
what's available today. But your company itself is a little bit of a transformational idea because of the way you're using the crowdsourcing.
We truly are changing the way the world works. And what's interesting, to kind of to your point, when we started this crowdsourcing and recruiting, we didn't really know what it was called. The crowdsourcing was not really in mainstream term. Mm-hmm. There was no Uber. Now, if I go, oh, hey, we're like the Uber but of inspections, we have all these lookers like Uber drivers, and oh, they get it, right?
Right.
So this was before that, and we were kind of first to market. So I had that kind of obstacle in front of me, which I didn't really pay a lot of attention to until later. I didn't focus on that part. I just knew that I needed a group of our community of lookers who we could dispatch. So we worked very, very hard to recruit nationwide and have excellent coverage in all different areas. And we've been working on that. That's always been my biggest strength. For example, I know anyone could come in. I mean, we've spent several million dollars on our technology. It's amazing. But if a very large company wanted to come in and build the same type of technology and platform, they absolutely could and probably do it better, but they don't have my community, and that's a huge barrier to entry. But this crowdsourcing, like you talked about, is definitely a big deal now. It's part of it, what's called the sharing economy or the gig economy, and more people are learning about it. More and more people love it. And we have talked to different experts who say this is how people will be working in the near future more and more. So we're definitely light years ahead of anyone with this type of platform of skill set within our workforce.
That's amazing, because it's important to be early, I guess,
yes.
quick, and then continue to evolve as you go.
Right.
And when you stop and think about the way we work now, it's a lot of it's because of technology that's available. But if we can sort of rewind in history, we realize that most communities in commerce began because they were local, and people who knew each other in their villages or communities shared services. So, you know, I'll give you this if you do this for me. And it was sort of that kind of an economy. And as our technology changed, the interactions, or the scale and scope of interactions changed. And now we've found ourselves in sort of a different kind of world, global world, connected by the internet, where the community has changed.
Yes.
The community really is nationwide, worldwide, whatever, and we connect in a very different kind of way.
We do.
It is a different kind of economy.
Right. And speaking of worldwide, technology enables us to, we have lookers in the UK, Australia, Canada, and my goal is to have world domination.
World, absolutely.
And
why
offer
not?
Looks anywhere.
In a good way.
Yes, in a good way. We say that laughingly around here. But to really be able to offer this service is a very valuable service for our customer. It offers supplemental income to our lookers, so it's valuable to them. And obviously, it's valuable to our employees here in Oklahoma City. So it's really a win-win-win situation.
It is, and it's such an interesting way to kind of think about how you're engaging economy around the world, but you're having a very direct, real impact on individuals. I've always thought of entrepreneurship kind of as an art form. And I am kind of in awe of entrepreneurs who are able to do things on large scales. I mean, in a sense, I'm an entrepreneur and I kind of have my thing I do. But really on a larger scale where you're engaging a lot of other people, you still begin with like a blank canvas.
Yes.
It's like an artist who stands there and looks at the canvas and says, now what will I paint today? And entrepreneurship is not much different from that.
No, and I love you say that. I feel the same way. So my entire family are artists, and they're very talented. And I never have been able to even draw really a stick figure. It's awful. But what I can do is I can take a blank computer screen and turn it into something that is alive, if you will, because now it's a living and breathing company, and there's things happening there's always in motion, and it's producing something. And so it's really interesting, like you say, it's putting that touch on it. I like feeling like maybe I'm an artist in that way. But I feel more like a basketball coach. I feel more of like a coach, if you will, at times. And I use a lot of sports analogies because of my basketball background.
It's a interesting way to think about business, because most people in business think of themselves as analyticals. And they're technically astute, and they figure things out, and they solve problems. But I've always been of the opinion that there is a bit of creativity in all that. You know, you might think someone might say, well, I'm not very creative, but they're thinking about creativity in the wrong way. They're thinking about someone who just sort of comes up with an idea out of what seems to be to them to be thin air. It's really not. And they see a sculptor, or they see an art piece or something like that, or hear a musical piece and so forth. But they don't realize that those people are also technicians.
Yes.
And artists are great, first of all, great technicians, and then they're great artists. And analyticals and business people and economists are also artists, but they have a different set of tools available to them. It's being able to take those numbers and create something with them that people can really grab a hold of and understand and use.
Absolutely. And I think that goes back to the main theme of this podcast. I think that sometimes people put limitations on themselves. Before, if I had said, you know what, I don't know very much about software, or I'm not a software engineer, I can't code. If I had put that limitation on myself, this would never have happened.
Right.
And it goes back to what I've learned of, you know, not having to be an expert within an industry to be the leader in that industry. And, you know, I think people can look at several examples. Let's use Uber again or Airbnb. Their founders had no experience in the transportation or hospitality industry, but have literally overnight disrupted both of them in major ways. And we're doing that with the traditional supply chain in Fortune 500 companies, which we can talk about a little bit more, because then we really only touched on the consumer. But my point is, you know, you may think you don't have the technical skills, or you don't think you have the creativity, but if you have the ability to put it all together and build that all-star team with the right tools, I think that's more important than having that knowledge sometimes.
Right. Well, you have the idea in your mind, and you see the pieces that need to integrate to sort of make that work, and you go out and find the the people to come in and be a part of that. And I do want to go back to what you mentioned earlier about the transformation of your business itself, mm-hmm. because you began thinking you were sort of a consumer or consumer-oriented business, only to find out there was a whole other side to that as well.
Right, right. And I think that some people, you know, we're talking about limitations. Some people are so set on their business process or their business model that they don't want to ever deviate from it. I think you have to really go with some experimentation, some customer demand, some even internal demand from your own organization. But we realized we had some organic and inbound requests from small and medium-sized companies that needed a nationwide footprint to go out and capture data on, say, commercial property or residential property inspection, fleet vehicles, that sort of thing. And our big break happened. We'd been performing some commercial property inspections for a big bank who JPMorgan Chase actually worked through. And when Hurricane Sandy hit, JPMorgan Chase had a list of properties they needed verified. And so this bank reached out to us and said, is there any way you can do this? And we had a FEMA certified looker mm-hmm. who went on his bicycle and performed these inspections. We all stayed up here over the weekend and we pushed out all the reports, left our logo on all the reports. And JPMorgan Chase was so impressed with not only the report, because we had customized it to that bank's needs, mm-hmm. but that the fact that we had been able to go in and do this so quickly. And so then they asked a couple of their vendors, CBRE, Butler Burger, to start using us for when they purchased inspections through them. And so that was kind of an epiphany or an aha moment there. We were like, okay, this definitely proves a business model within the B2B sector, and there's this need for that. So we kind of shifted our focus because, frankly, the going after individuals with a new product was very, very expensive, right? And right. we were bootstrapping. And I just thought, oh, when people hear about this or when eBay hears about this, I went to eBay for the first time in February 2011 with this business model. I said, here, we've built this around your entire customer base. And it took 5 years for us to integrate with them. But my point is it didn't happen the way I thought. So, you know, I had to like learn how to pivot and start really getting some traction with these B2B clients. And that's how it kind of started happening. And when we learned so much from working with these smaller and mid-sized clients, so when the opportunity came to start working with some very huge, large clients, we were able to do so. And then we went through a Series A round and raised some money locally through some angel investment and some state funds. And so we were able to build a platform that could support the scale of very large clients. So that's kind of our story of moving into that enterprise space. But what's fascinating on that, not only did we touch the B2B just as a typical vendor service, like say a property inspection, we are now working with these clients and we're replacing like their field assignment personnel, or we're replacing their bank personnel, because we're able to go out and meet with a customer on demand to capture the data that their employees typically would need to do. And we do it much more efficiently and faster. So that's really, we're changing some processes there of right. how people, big companies actually utilize the crowd now, which is, that is super exciting.
Well, it's good for, I think it's good for the economy as a whole.
Right.
I mean, you're giving other people a chance to have a reach beyond just themselves and their own community.
Right. One of the banks that we work with, they're able to offer their services now anywhere in the United States, right. not just to their own bank members. And that's huge.
That's huge.
It makes our relationship very sticky, right? Because we're part of that process and they can't do it without us.
Right.
So it's a very successful product. Mm-hmm. That's what I love, is coming in and being part of that solution.
Occurred to me that we may be reinventing or retooling the concept of what employment is.
Yes.
And how we count employment.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people out there in the economy who are working sort of as their own agents in a way, and they have a number of things they do from which they derive a pretty decent income, mm-hmm. and they're not working in the traditional definition of being employed.
Everyone's kind of working through that, but it's very popular. And, you know, you can see the stories in our conference room from our lookers, why they enjoy the gig economy. And it's definitely a fantastic way for veterans, stay-at-home moms, even professional field inspectors. We have pastors, firemen. We have all kinds of different people in our platform. We're working on adding licensed drone operators right now. So we're always thinking of the future. How can we, you know, be accessible there so we can add any kind of skill set into our community? And then you as a customer can dispatch someone if you need someone who speaks Vietnamese, if you need someone who's a licensed heavy equipment operator or drone operator, you can dispatch on demand the kind of worker that you need to perform that task. And so we're building a really robust community. And
it's just really very fun. It's
fun.
Yeah, it's obviously fun. I've had the good fortune of touring through your offices and meeting a lot of the people who are working on your team. And they just seem to really thoroughly enjoy what they're doing.
Thanks. We try to definitely have that kind of environment here. And we just hired our 100th employee. They start next week.
All right.
It's a big milestone. It just puts a big smile on my face.
Well, I hope that also takes off and we do more of that here.
Oh, absolutely.
Down the road.
Yes.
Well, now, we talked about your business, but I know, you know, there's the other side of Robin that is your personal story, and it is an interesting story. And the word transformation kind of also applies to that as well. And you've told the story a number of times, and I've picked up on some of the bigger parts of it. But you have found yourself evolving and changing and growing throughout your life. Tell us a little bit about how that part has played in to what WeGoLook is today.
I think an important thing for people to remember is to always continue to innovate, whether that's your personal self or at your place of business, or both, obviously. But I've had to always kind of learn some of it through necessity, some of it through just pure desire to succeed and make something of myself. So growing up on the farm, I think, you know, you had to be kind of innovative to make things happen. And it gave me really good work ethic. My dad would have me work on the weekends. Other kids would be at the lake, at Fort Cobb Lake, and I would be getting up when it was dark and didn't so much appreciate it back then, but I do now. Worked really hard. I applied at Mazzio's in Anadarko. My first day was on my 16th birthday, and I loved working always. So it was important for me to. We didn't have a lot of money, and so you know, if I wanted to buy something, I had to work for it. And went through all of that, and went to college. Actually, didn't finish college. I landed a really good job with the Washington Post through an internship while I was in college. Also, had my first son while I was in college. You know, he really changed my life when he was born. He just gave me so much inspiration to totally want to achieve big, big things. And his father has since passed away. I remarried. And then my youngest son's father passed away. It's really that doesn't typically happen to people in their lifetime. Mm-hmm. The percentage of that, I want to go buy lottery tickets sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I've always been like their sole parent. And that's always been so I've always kind of incorporated them into my job also.
Right.
And I say these things because I want people out there to go, I don't think it really matters what your situation is. I think you can overcome it, because I could have felt really sorry for myself, and I could have been, you know what, I need to just do this. But I took some chances because of that situation. I had a great job. I had a great job, but I was like, you know what? I need to be at home more. I need to be able to take them to their ball games more. Cause it was a lot. I mean, it's tough when you're a parent with two kids that play ball all the time. And so I was like, I can't work a traditional job. So that's when I created my consulting company. And that was tough because I had a good job, it was steady income. But I took that step and I kind of looked at myself and I use that as a term. I think that's being innovative. Mm-hmm. In a way, people may not look at that, but I had to look at that and make those changes within myself. And so I did that. And that worked really, really well for me because it was flexible.
Right. Well, that's a good point to make about our personal transformations, is because many of our transformations come out of circumstances.
Yes.
They don't always come because we have we put a big dream in our mind of what we want to be and we work toward it. Some people are able to do that. But for most of us, our transformations comes out of our personal circumstances. And that's not too unusual about what you said about your business experience. You were able to pivot. And you were able to pivot in your business, just like you were able to pivot in your personal life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good lesson for us all to take away, is that in this transformational process, we always have to be willing and ready to say, you know, I need to make this little adjustment, or I need to go in a different direction. And I can't hold on to just what I thought was who I was or mm-hmm. what my business was about. All of the circumstances are saying, no, that's not it. And so pivot.
And it's hard to give up that control feeling because you just have to have faith and just kind of put your hands up and say, okay, this is what I need to do. And it's really hard to do.
It is hard to do. Well, I was going to ask you, you know, I know you're sort of living entrepreneurship. A lot of times I get to talk to people who have already done it and built a couple of companies and they're looking back, but you're kind of in the middle of it. And so in from your perspective, as we're being in the middle of this, as it's growing around you and with you, and what advice do you give to young people today who are thinking about what they want to do?
I would definitely encourage everyone to kind of learn everything that they can. I think, you know, going to different chamber meetings or like 1 Million Cups and finding groups, you know, the 30 under 30, working with different types of people that are in similar situations, and this collaboration and talking with them and having that resource is so important. And not to be scared to ask questions, and don't be scared to say, I don't understand this. I don't know if I'm going down the right path. What do you really have some honest conversations with people. I think, especially young people that may not have any confidence in their idea or not the experience in it yet, you know, just to be able to kind of bounce some things off different people. I think it's important for business leaders to also be those mentors and to really step up to the plate and help some of these young people with these ideas. But definitely learning everything you can. I will say this real quick. When I was working with the auto dealers, you know, I learned a lot about fixed operations, and they had me start doing more than what I was doing. And they had me start working with them on submitting different types of projects to the OEMs. And I was like, why am I learning all this stuff? I don't really want to learn about the service department. I don't really want to learn the ins and outs. I mean, that's not my, do I really care? But there was also the part of me that said, you know what, Robin, just learn everything that you can, immerse yourself in it. All of that knowledge has helped me in some form mm-hmm. or fashion. And so I think when you're in a situation, especially when you can be around other people or other companies, find out everything that you can, or you know, what is great about your idea, you know, what affects it, who is the end user. And I mean, really sitting down and working on a true business plan and make sure that you're focused on the right things. No one wants to write a business plan. I can tell, well, I don't. It's just boring, but it's necessary, right. And it's a good exercise. I would suggest for anyone who's thinking of doing something, and I'm talking about it will take you a month or longer of real work. It is a long process, but I definitely suggest doing some of those things.
Right, and it is hard work. There are some grueling things in there that are not very exciting or sexy or whatever, but they're necessary.
It is. I will say this also. I think we've had people that we've spoken to, they think going to a startup, you know, you read about all these cool startups in Silicon Valley. They have a wine bar and they have bean bags. And we actually have one bean bag here. But they have, you know, the ping pong tables and this and that. And they think it's really kind of a glamorous, when you were talking about sexy type work. It's not. Being an entrepreneur is grinding every day, all the time. Literally 24/7. You can be in bed laying awake thinking about it, early thing. When you're taking a shower, you're thinking about it. I don't watch TV. And I will say this also to the young people. If you have time to watch whatever The Bachelor or Bachelorette, or you've got all these plans, you're not really committed to your idea, Right. So it's a choice. Do you want to work really hard and make it happen? It's very fulfilling. Some people go, that's not healthy. That's not what I want to do. It's not for them.
Right. Does it's that not make for sense? Everyone.
It's not.
Right.
But it's amazing when you get in there and it happens.
There's a real joy to it. It's a creative, yes. creative effort. That's why
Absolutely.
I say it's like art.
I love it.
It's not for everyone, but everyone can enjoy the product.
Yes.
One of the things about growing in the job that you're growing in and transforming into the job you're transforming into is that I know, and I'm pretty sure that 10 or 15 years ago, you didn't really see yourself as a person a lot of people like me and others will want to come to and say, hey, how'd you do it?
Yeah.
That you would be in sort of a public leadership place where people would look to you as sort of a leader in your enterprise, a leader in your entrepreneurial spirit, or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
How has that realizing that helped also shape you?
You know, I don't think I've really realized it quite yet because people do reach out to me or I hear what they say about me and I'm like, oh, wow, you know, because I feel like I'm just me, right?
Right.
But absolutely never thought that I would be really changing or instrumental in this shift that's happening here. And I'm proud to say it's here in Oklahoma. It's very rewarding. I just, I don't think it's really sunk in yet. I'm not quite sure I have 100% belief. Maybe in another few years, I'll go, okay, you know what? I did this and it was amazing. And maybe I am an industry leader. I'm just me right now still.
Well, the transformation continues.
Yes.
So,
and I
guess that's kind of the point is that we all find ourselves in places where we are growing in other ways that we may not even be quite aware of at the moment.
We'll have the same conversation in 5 years.
I'll have a better answer. When it's a worldwide global enterprise.
That's right. I'll be an expert.
Then you'll be, that's right, for sure. Well, listen, thanks so much for sharing your time and insights.
Thank you.
On the spirit of leading. And I wish you the very, very best, and I'm excited for you and your organization. And,
thank you so much.
And WeGoLook.com, the name of the enterprise, and Robin Smith, founder and CEO of the organization, a transformational entrepreneur, I might say, and still in the making.
That's right.
My guest on this episode of The Spirit of Leading.
Thank you.
So that's it for this episode of The Spirit of Leading, and I want to thank you for listening. I want you to recognize and appreciate the opportunities that everybody else offers to encourage the spirit, to enliven the heart, to enlighten the mind, and to enlarge the expectations of living in themselves and in others. I want to encourage you to live each and every day empowered. I'm Garland McWaters.